Here in the United States, many regions are having a hot summer. Throw humidity into the mix and conditions can be dangerous. Public health scholars say the worst heat disaster in U.S. history was the Chicago heat wave of July 1995. In his book, Heat Wave, author Eric Kleinenberg says for 1 week, Chicago was an urban inferno.
At one point on Thursday the 13th, the heat index topped 120 degrees and it hovered around 100 for 3 days. Chicago turned into a tropical city, and it began to break down.
As people turned up the air conditioning, the local utility couldn't meet the demand. There were power outages. Residents opened hundreds of fire hydrants for relief, leaving several neighborhoods without water pressure. Streets buckled, rail lines began to melt, and hundreds of people died.
739 in excess of the norm during the week of July 14th to July 20th. So many people died in Chicago that week that the medical examiner had to bring 9 50-foot-long refrigerated trucks into his office parking lot to store the bodies. It was overwhelming, almost surreal for the people who watched it.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's been some controversy over how many people actually died as a result of that heat. How was that determined? How do we get to the 739?
Well, there's two different measures that public health scholars and medical examiners use to assess mortality from a heat wave. The first is called the heat-related death. And to determine a heat-related death, you need to do an investigation or a medical examination. That means a body has to be brought to the morgue and examined by medical examiners, or the scene of the death has to be investigated by police officers who file official reports. And as you can imagine, there are hundreds of bodies that will be buried before there's an investigation or an examination. And so the findings of the medical examiner were that during this week, there were 485 heat-related deaths. That means they did investigations for 485 cases. And as many people in Chicago remember, the mayor and many city officials challenged the credibility of those findings. But what the medical examiner insisted throughout the week is that actually he was drastically undercounting the amount of mortality because he knew that there would be so many people who were buried before an investigation. And not long after the week, the city's own Department of Epidemiology was able to calculate an excess death figure. And they do that by looking at the normal number of people who would die during a week in July. Turns out in Chicago, that's around 500 people. Mm-hmm. And then they look at the actual number of deaths for that period. And that week in Chicago, July 14th to July 20th, the excess death rate was 739 above the norm.
Well, I was in Chicago at the time covering this story for the public radio station there. And I think everyone, at least initially, was really hard-pressed to believe that the deaths of so many people could be attributed to the heat. I mean, hot summers in Chicago are a norm. And the city government has this history of preparing for the winter and snow and cold and instead of heat. So how much of that attitude do you think played a role in how the city reacted to this?
Well, our collective failure to recognize both the dangers of heat and also the dangers of everyday isolation and poverty in Chicago played important roles. Compared to other disasters, heat waves are invisible. They don't generate the spectacular images we get with hurricanes or tornadoes or floods, and so they don't make television news programs. They're not typically on the front pages of newspapers. They kill more Americans than all other natural disasters combined. And in my view, many of the agencies and organizations to whom we entrust responsibility for protecting more vulnerable people are somewhat out of touch with the lived experience of being isolated, of being at risk, of being poor.
Well, many of these heat wave victims were elderly and poor, as you mentioned, without air conditioners. You took a look at a couple of city neighborhoods to compare them to examine who died and why. North Lawndale was one, primarily an African-American neighborhood, Little Village nearby, and mostly Latino. So what did you find?
Well, I was intrigued by the discussions about race and vulnerability in Chicago when I began the research, many people had noted that African Americans in the city were far more likely than other groups to die in the heat wave, and that Latinos were less likely to die, and I wanted to understand that. I went to the west side of the city, where there are two neighborhoods, North Lawndale and South Lawndale, which we colloquially call the Little Village, where they had comparable numbers of older people living alone, actually more in Little Village than in North Lawndale, and yet drastically different death rates. The death rate in North Lawndale was 10 times higher than it was in Little Village. North Lawndale, like many of the predominantly African American and poor neighborhoods in Chicago, had been kind of bombed out by the transformation since the 1960s. Thousands, tens of thousands of residents left, and families were split up as younger people moved out to try to find work in other places. There was a kind of ecology of abandoned buildings and empty lots. There was a lot of street crime, all the conditions that would prevent older people from going out into public. And if you went across the street, just a little bit down the road into Little Village, you found a neighborhood that was also poor, that also had a number of people living alone, but that ecologically looked different. It was bursting with people. It was overpopulated. Mm-hmm. Busy street life, day and night, more shops than you can imagine, street vendors, activities spilling out into the public. And these are conditions that create some hazards, but in heat waves are protective because they facilitate social life. And what became clear is that the patterns of mortality were not simply attributable to race, and they also weren't attributable to family values. If you talk to people in North Lawndale, they expressed great value for family and interest in what was happening around them. But the social ecology, the public spaces facilitated social life in Little Village and not in North Lawndale.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a lot of finger pointing afterwards about what had happened in Chicago, and I know that there was a commission which conducted an investigation. What did that commission find, and what kind of changes did the city make? And did it learn anything, you think?
The local government has become far more aggressive at reacting to dangerous summer heat. Chicago has developed a truly exemplary heat emergency response plan. They compile a list of older, isolated people who are vulnerable to heat death. They open a heat command center when it gets hot and call people, or sometimes even go door to door to check up on them and make sure that they're safe. The city offers special transportation so that people can get to the cooling centers that it opens. And it monitors what's happening in emergency rooms so that they don't close down as they did in 1995. The big question, I think, is whether other cities are developing comparable kinds of responses, and more importantly, whether Chicago, as well as these other cities, is facing the underlying vulnerabilities, the underlying isolation and deprivation that make heat waves so dangerous in the first place. And on that score, I'm less confident.
Eric Kleiningberg, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Kleiningberg is the author of Heat Wave, A Social Autopsy of Disaster in Chicago.